So today we're talking about being with the Buddha through ethics. Yeah, so yesterday it's very much setting the scene in my talk about for the whole retreat in terms of cultivating just how do we go about cultivating an attitude of being with the Buddha and different ways into doing that through the texts, through stories of the Buddha, through devotional practice, through meditation, just through being together and being in our lives. So that's very much the content of yesterday, just starting to explore how we can use this week to really try and open to an experience of being with the Buddha and the Buddha as our teacher. And we looked at the first two verses of the Dhammapada, where the Buddha's very much teaching us that experiences are created by mind. And we talked about how the retreat is just an opportunity to observe our minds and to see this truth for ourselves, yeah? To see this truth for ourselves. So everything we do this week, we're trying to do that with this attitude of being with the Buddha. So when we're listening to the Buddha's teachings or when we're studying the Buddha's teachings together, all the time, just trying to open to an attitude that it was the Buddha who taught this 2,500 years ago. And these teachings are coming all the way down through the ages to us here and now. So we are disciples of the Buddha in the way that the people, we are descendants of the Buddha in the way that the people who were disciples of the Buddha at the time would have sat and listened to him teaching. So today we're listening to the Buddha teaching us about ethics. So the Buddha taught the spiritual life in terms of the threefold way. So he said the spiritual life has three great stages, and they are ethics, meditation, and wisdom. So today we're looking at the first great stage of the spiritual path, which is ethics. And tomorrow we'll look at wisdom, at meditation, and then the day after we'll look at wisdom. So the Buddha's going to teach us about ethics, meditation, and wisdom. And he's going to teach us about that through the Dhammapada. So we're going to be using verses from the Dhammapada which illustrate these stages of the path. So instead of looking at the Dhammapada chapter by chapter, it's so vast, I thought, let's look at the Buddha's teaching of the three great stages through the Dhammapada. Yeah, so that's what we're going to be doing. So today we're going to be looking at verses from the Dhammapada on ethics. But before we launch into the text, I just want to give a bit of a background to ethics in Buddhism, just so we all are clear about what ethics is in a Buddhist context. So ethics in Buddhism is a mind-based ethics. It's an ethics of intention. So yesterday we heard that experiences are preceded by mind, led by mind, and produced by mind. Yeah, so this centrality of mind in Buddhism is really, really key and crucial. So when we're thinking about ethics, we're also thinking about the mind. Yeah? We're thinking about what is the quality of our mind, of our mental state. And it's the quality of our mind or our mental state that determines the relative skillfulness or unskillfulness of that action. So we review our actions of body, speech, and mind when we're thinking about ethics. And our skillfulness of our actions of body and speech are determined by the mental state in which we did that action. So if our mind is full of skillful mental states, so full of love, generosity, contentment, then skillful actions of body and speech will arise out of that. They're skillful mental states, and skillful actions of body and speech will arise out of that. And if our mind is full of greed, hatred, delusion, then unskillful actions of body and speech will arise out of that, as well as unskillful mental states. So yeah, so in Buddhism, we're looking at our actions of body, speech and mind, as and their skillfulness or their unskillfulness is determined by the quality of your mind. Yeah. So as Buddhists, we think about the practice of ethics through the precepts. So this is illustrated in the precepts. So in the precepts, we have the negative precepts and we have the positive precepts. So the negative precepts are all around abstaining from unskillful mental states, abstaining from taking life, taking the not given, abstaining from sexual misconduct, abstaining from false speech, abstaining from intoxication. Yeah, so they're all about abstaining from impure mental states and the actions that arise out of those impure states. And then we have the positive precepts, which are all about cultivating pure and skillful states of mind, cultivating love, generosity, stillness, simplicity and contentment, truthful communication, and mindfulness and clarity. So that's a kind of quick review of Buddhist ethics, just so we know where we're starting from. And when I was preparing that, I was thinking, well, why do we practice ethics? So that's what ethics is in Buddhism. And why do we practice ethics? So as we heard in the first two verses of the Dhammapada yesterday, impure mind, unskillful mental states lead to suffering. And a pure mind, skillful mental states lead to happiness. So in a way, this is why we practice ethics. We practice ethics because our actions have consequences. Yeah, and we want to be happy. So we practice skillful ethics for our own happiness and for the happiness of all beings, actually. So that's one reason why we practice ethics. But Sangharakshita says, he says, skillful action by itself, even skillful mental states by themselves, cannot lead one directly to enlightenment. In the Buddhist view, morality is rather like the launch pad of a rocket. You can't launch the rocket without the launch pad. But once the rocket is launched, the launch pad is left behind. It doesn't go into the stars. So morality is not identical with the spiritual life. It is only part of it, only a means to an end. The immediate end being meditation and the ultimate aim being wisdom or even the realization of enlightenment. So we're not just practicing ethics to be happy. We're practicing ethics as the first stage of three stages towards enlightenment. So the spiritual life isn't just about polishing the wheel, it's about getting off the wheel. Yeah? So ethics isn't just about being more happy, it's about moving ourselves towards enlightenment or awakening. And so if we're going to progress through these three stages of ethics, meditation and wisdom, if we want to get to meditation and then wisdom, we have to practice ethics. So have you ever had a big argument with someone, even in your own mind, and then try to go and meditate? It's quite difficult, isn't it, to then move from those kind of angry mental states into trying to be calm and concentrated and cultivating positivity. Can be a brilliant thing to do, but our ethics, what we've been doing with our mind, directly affects our capacity to meditate, which then directly affects our capacity and openness to wisdom. So if we want to gain enlightenment, we want to get more wise and awakened, we have to practice ethics. Yeah. If we want to launch our rocket to the stars, we need a launch pad. That's what Sankaracharya is saying. So we need to practice ethics. So let's start looking at the Dhammapada and the Buddha's teaching on the Dhammapada, in the Dhammapada on ethics. There's lots and lots of verses throughout the Dhammapada on ethics. So I had to just choose a few of them. And what I mainly chose to do was look at some verses from two chapters, the chapter on evil and the chapter of flowers. And we'll start with the chapter on evil. So this chapter on evil was one of the first chapters that Sangharakshita translated from the Pali into the English when he was doing his own translation. And he did a seminar on this chapter from the Dhammapada back in 1983 at Padmaloka. And it's a great seminar. I'll put it out in the lounge and you can have a little look at it if you'd like to. So he's studying in a seminar these verses with a bunch of guys at Padmaloka. So the first verse, the Buddha says, it's verse 116. The Buddha says, "Be quick to do what is morally beautiful. Restrain the mind from evil. He who is sluggish in doing good, his mind delights in evil." What I particularly like about this verse is you have ethics being described as beautiful. Yeah. So in Pali, that's the word kalyana. Yeah. So it's beautiful. So ethics are, it's significant that ethics are being described as beautiful, because so often we can relate to ethics as do's and don'ts. Yeah. And that isn't what they are. Ethics are an embodiment of our ideal. So in Sangharakshita's words, he says, "Ethics is not a question of do's and don'ts. Ethics is basically a question of being attracted towards an ideal, if you like, which is actually appealing. If someone has no sense of what is morally beautiful, well, then he has to be restrained by do's and don'ts. But if one can simply feel the beauty, as it were, of the ethical ideal, well, obviously, that is a much better way of going about things." So in a way, it's relating to the precepts as an embodiment of the Buddha. So the Buddha would have acted ethically. Yeah, he would have been abstaining from, naturally, he would have been in very pure mental states, just acting out of love and generosity and compassion towards all beings. Yeah. And so in a way, when we're acting ethically, we're acting as if we are the Buddha. Yeah. So abstaining from impure states and cultivating pure states, in doing that, we're trying to act as if we are the Buddha. So we're trying to embody our ideal. So ethics, in terms of the precepts, they're not a question of do's and don'ts. They're a question of our ideals. And if we can relate to those ideals as beautiful, then we naturally want to aspire to them. Then we naturally want to be ethical. Yeah? So that's the whole significance, in a way, of ethics being morally beautiful. It's because ethics is a manifestation of our ideals and of enlightenment. So maybe it's worth us thinking in our groups about, how do we relate to ethical practice? Do you relate to your ethical practice as beautiful? Or do you relate to the practice of the precepts as a list of do's and don'ts, and either want to do them because you're a good girl or rebel against them because you're a rebel? So, you know, how do you relate to ethical practice? And so the Buddha's saying, be quick to do what is morally beautiful. Yeah. And this is quite important as well. So how many of you here have had that experience where you hear about someone's situation maybe someone's not well, or they're very tired at the moment, or they're a bit skint, or something going on for them that's a bit difficult, and you have this sort of, oh, I could help them by doing such and such and such, or giving them such and such and such. How often have you had that thought and then not done it? Yeah? It's probably, well, for me, that can be quite a regular occurrence unless I really watch out for it. So we really need to be quick to do what is morally beautiful, because otherwise something else comes in and we don't follow up on those impulses. So we might have had an impulse to give £100 to someone who's in need, and we end up giving them a fiver. So, you know, just watch that tendency of mind to dwindle away that generous action if we don't just follow it through. Yes, yeah, so be quick to do what is morally beautiful. So the next sentence is restrain the mind from evil. Otherwise translated as hinder the mind from evil, or prevent the mind from doing what is unskillful. And in a way, this is just the counterpart to being quick to do what is morally beautiful. So we're being quick to do what is morally beautiful, therefore we're restraining our mind from doing evil. Yeah. He who is sluggish in doing good, his mind delights in evil. So the word for good in this context is punya. And it makes me think, well, the mind often needs something to do. Yeah. And so if we're not making a strong, determined effort to do what is good, the chances are that your mind will get into the habit of doing evil. So I think that's why it can be really helpful and important in our lives to have something good and positive and inspiring and beautiful to do. And just thinking about it now, it makes me think, oh, well, that's why, one of the reasons why I think team-based right livelihood or right livelihood is so important, because it gives us something to do that's positive. Yeah. So I think, we need to give our minds something to do that is good and positive and beautiful. In a way, we need to train ourselves in generosity and loving kindness. And that's why we do the Metta Bhavana, isn't it? Metta Bhavana is part of training ourselves to incline our mind towards loving kindness. And we do that on the cushion so that we can do that off the cushion. That our mind more naturally does that. So when I hear this line, I also think it's worth saying this isn't an excuse to get over busy as a way of avoiding painful experience. So we do need things to do. Our minds need positive things to engage with. And we need to remain aware of what we're doing. So there is a way in which, I don't know if any of you can recognise this tendency, to get over busy, so you just don't have to really sit with what's going on for you in that moment. But I was thinking about, well, what do we do with our minds when our mind, when we're in a bit of a negative mental state? So maybe we probably all got our own favourites that we get into. But maybe our mind's delighting in evil. So evil in this context, of course, just means unskillful. So our mind's delighting in unskillful mental states. So maybe we're feeling grumpy with somebody we live with or somebody at work. And maybe that's a familiar story to us and we're caught up in that. Or we're doing a poor me thing. If you rather do it to yourself than somebody else, whatever. So what do we do with our mind when we're in that mental state? Yeah, so if the mind is like a river, yes, we talked about that yesterday, the mind being like a river, what do we need to do with our minds when we're in those negative mental states? How are we going to clean up our minds? So it might be that you choose to go and meditate. It might be that you choose to go and listen to the Dharma or read the Dharma. But I was also they're the sort of things that I think can just be really helpful. I have resistance to doing it when I'm in a negative mental state. But actually, if I do it, it can be the thing that is the medicine, yeah, that really does make the difference, and helps me change and clean up my mind. But I was thinking, it's another reason why we might, if we've managed to learn something like the Dharma part of by heart, then we've got something like that with us, yeah, all the time in our minds. So if we're noticing ourselves in a negative mental state, then we can use call on the advice of the Buddha because we've got it already in our minds, which personally I can find really helpful. And if we're very distracted in meditation, we can do that. We could drop in bits from the Dhammapada. So the next two verses. Should a man once do evil, let him not make a habit of it. Let him not set his heart on it. Painful is the heaping up of evil. Should a man once do good, let him make a habit of it. Let him set his heart on it. Happy is the heaping up of good. So here the Buddha's teaching us about habits. And, well, we need to be conscious about the habits that we're creating. And are those habits skillful or unskillful? And if those habits are unskillful, then we're going to be heaping up pain for ourselves and others. And if those habits are skillful, then we're going to be heaping up good for ourselves and others. So we need to think carefully about what habits we already have and what habits we continue to set up in ourselves. So habits in themselves actually are quite a good thing. I'll just say that. Because if we don't have any habits, then we have to make decisions all the time. So I have a habit of having porridge for breakfast. So when I'm on retreat, I come into the breakfast room and I know I'm going to have porridge. So I get a bowl of porridge and I sit down and I eat it. It's relatively straightforward. Now, if I didn't have that habit, I'd have to come in and decide, shall I have porridge today? Or would I rather have cornflakes? Or maybe it's a bran flakes day. Or maybe I could try muesli, but then I didn't soak it last night. And okay, so maybe I'll just stick with the toast, but then shall I have white or brown? And then maybe I don't want more bread, so maybe I'll stick to the oat cakes or rice cakes or Ryvita. Or maybe I'll just have some fruit. So habits are a good thing, actually. They keep life simple. If we don't have habits, we're in a constant state of trying to work out what we're doing. So habits in themselves really aren't a bad thing. It's what the habit is that's crucial. Yeah. So we need to be becoming more aware of what our habits are and whether those habits are helping us heap up pain or heap up good for ourselves and others. And if we're doing something for the first time, you know, we're thinking about starting a new class or starting a new relationship or moving to a new town or starting a new job. Really, they're the time to really think, is that the right thing to do? Is that the habit that I want to set in motion? Because once you've made the decision to do things, you are setting a new habit in motion. And once you've done it once, like go to the class or go and see someone new or set up a new relationship, once you've done it a few times, it does become a habit. Yeah? And that can be a really positive thing, and it might not be so positive. So really think it through before you do things the first time. Because once we've set our heart on it, then we've set our heart on it. It's harder. And that can go for things that we want to do, but we find a bit difficult. So like, say, having a daily meditation practice at home. Maybe that's quite difficult. But if you just do it, you will get into a habit of it. Yeah? So the first few times will be difficult, but it will get easier because you will be developing a habit. So we need to be aware of our habits, and we need to be willing to review our habits as well. So the third fetter is the fetter of rites and rituals. So it's kind of the fetter of going through the motions. So in the spiritual life, we need to be aware of this fetter. Where are my habits just going through the motions? Where am I fettered by the fetter of rites and rituals? So where am I just meditating because that's what I do on a Sunday afternoon? Or are you meditating because you actually want to get enlightened and awakening? Or you have a sense of clear purpose? So you need to be reviewing your habits as well and make sure they're still serving your ideals and your vision, and that they haven't just become a rite and a ritual in your life. Yeah, so in the groups and on the retreat generally, you know, take time just to notice your habits. Take the time to reflect on them. Notice where you've got unskillful habits that are causing you pain. And if you have got unskillful habits that are causing you pain, are you doing anything about it? And what could you be doing about it? Think about your life as well a little bit at home in relation to these things. And do you have skillful habits? And what are the effects of those on your mind? So again, we're trying to develop this reflective acceptance of the teaching. So we're hearing the teaching. We're hearing the Buddha say that we need to form positive habits. So we need to feel that for ourselves. We need to think that through for ourselves. We need to develop a reflective acceptance that this is true. So the next two verses. Do not underestimate evil, thinking it will not approach me. A water pot becomes full by the constant falling of drops of water. Similarly, the spiritually immature person, little by little, fills himself with evil. Do not underestimate good, thinking it will not approach me. A water pot becomes full by the constant falling of drops of water. Similarly, the wise man, little by little, fills himself with good. So this is the Buddha saying, don't underestimate your habits. So what might seem like a small habit will accumulate an effect. Yeah? And so this could be an unskillful small habit, which will ultimately fill yourself with more unskillfulness and pain. Or it could be a skillful habit, which is ultimately going to fill yourself with good. So what are you filling your water pot with? And I was reflecting on these verses last night after our evening session, and I was thinking about those little actions of unskillful mental states that go on in my mind. So maybe that's envy towards someone, or irritation towards someone, or maybe I'm feeling jealous of someone, or feeling threatened by them in some way. And I kind of justify it by thinking, oh, well, no one will notice because it's just going on in my mind. Yeah. Hopefully I'm not acting all of that out too much. But it will have an effect. Yeah, little by little, if I allow those mental states of irritation and envy to go unacknowledged to myself or to others, then little by little, that's what I'll be filling myself with. Yeah. So it's really taking responsibility for those mental states. So I think as we practice over a longer period of time, our relative skillfulness and unskillfulness becomes more subtle. So we might have stopped yelling at people or hitting people or that sort of thing, yeah? But actually our mind maybe is still full of, at least some of the time, those acts of irritation towards others or hatred even towards others. And so even if we're skillful enough that we're not acting that out, it's still going on in our minds. And we need to take responsibility for that. We need to know that that has an effect, yeah, on ourselves and the world. We need to transform that ill will into compassion. And a great way of doing this can be through confession practice with a friend. Ginny and I have taken up doing confession practice together at in the Tararoa community. And it's, you know, it's a really great way to acknowledge that you have those mental states and confess them. Because I'm locked up in a view that I'm a good girl, so I can't possibly feel angry towards anybody. So it's good for me to be able to admit that I do occasionally. So that's on the filling my water pot with evil side. So on the filling our water pot with good, I think metta practice really springs to mind very strongly in this. So if you think metta practice can often be talked about as planting seeds, you can think about metta practice as being out in the fields planting seeds of metta, and those seeds will grow into crops and fruit of the metta. And the water pot's another image. So little by little, we fill ourselves with metta. I think that's really helpful because sometimes when I'm doing the metta bath, at least I can think, oh, is this making any difference? Yeah. And I think having the Buddha telling us little by little, you're filling yourself with good. It's just a really good reminder in those moments where doubt creeps in the metta bhavana of like, actually, this will have an effect. Yeah. So if that doubt ever comes to you in the metta bhavana, remember this verse. Little by little, I'm filling myself with good. I'm filling myself with metta. It will have an effect. And we will change. So sometimes change happens very fast. And sometimes change happens very slowly. So you need to constantly remind yourself that the spiritual path is a slow and gradual process, a process of constantly repeating increments of good. But good is accumulated. If you just go on constantly performing skillful actions in one way or another, on however humble a scale, you will change yourself. You will, in the end, transform yourself. So that was Bhante's words in his seminar when he was studying this back in 1983. So I think we too can have that confidence that through doing these practices, even on if they feel very humble or we feel like, oh, is this really, are we really changing? Just have confidence that we can change. And that this might take time. The benefit of hindsight in spiritual practices is a good thing, being able to look back. So I've been practicing the Dharma about 10 years or so, a bit more maybe. And it is just being able to look back and see who I was before I came across the Dharma and see who I am now and know that I have changed and know that it works. And I'm sure we've all had that experience, however long we've been practicing. Actually, because I think if you hadn't had the experience of being changed by the Dharma, you wouldn't be here. Yeah? So draw on that. Draw on the fact that you've been changed as a way of having confidence in the Dharma and the effect that it can have on you. So it's a way of cultivating faith in your Dharma practice, is reflecting on the way that you've changed. Okay, so now we come to chapter 4, which is a chapter of flowers. This chapter's got one of my favourite verses of the Dhammapada in, which goes like this. One should pay no heed to the faults of others, what they have done or not done. Rather, one should consider the things that one has oneself done and not done. It's classic, isn't it? So the Buddha said that 2,500 years ago, and I think that's so relevant to me today, here and now, isn't it? How much time do we spend wasted thinking about the faults of others so that we don't have to think about our own faults? If we do that for just 5 minutes, it's too much. So, this is really the Buddha saying, don't waste your energy finding fault and blaming others. Look at your own ethics. You can't look at somebody else's ethics. You can't really know what was going on in their mind when they did that. You might be able to have a good guess sometimes, but you can't really know what their intention was. But you can know what your own intention was that led to that action of body and mind. So really, really try and remember kindness for others, ethics for yourself. Yeah. So look at your own ethics. Then verses 51 to 53. Like a beautiful flower, brightly coloured, but without scent, even so useless is the well-uttered speech of one who does not act accordingly. Like a beautiful flower, brightly coloured and scented, even so useful is the well-uttered speech of one who acts accordingly. As many garlands are made up from a heap of flowers, so one who is mortal-born should perform many ethically skillful deeds. So in India, you might have seen them here as well, they have these garlands, beautiful garlands that are made up of flowers that they sew, and they decorate shrines or people even with these garlands. Yeah. So the Buddha here is saying, like we make these beautiful garlands to decorate things that we love, ethics should be like making beautiful flower garlands. Yeah. So the ethical life is like a beautiful flower, and our ethical practice should be like making beautiful flower garlands that we want to give away. So through our ethical practice, that's the image that actually we're making a beautiful flower garlands to give away. So the ethical life is not a dour, miserable life of restraint, of do's and don'ts. It's a beautiful life, yeah? It's morally beautiful, and its symbol is of flowers, yeah? So flowers have got these beautiful fragrance, haven't they, that perfume the world. So our ethical practice are like beautiful flowers that perfume the world. So what are you perfuming the world with? Yeah? So I suspect we've all had this experience, maybe not so much in the realm of the smell sense, but you know, when someone walks into a room and they're like a dark cloud. Yeah, they're not. They're in a really grumpy, miserable mental state. And they walk in and it's like a dark cloud's just moved in. And it has a big effect on the whole atmosphere. So then they walk out of the room, and someone bright, bouncy, smiley, serene walks in and sits down. And that perfumes the atmosphere. So the ethical life, our ethical life, our mental states perfume the atmosphere, not just for us, but for other people as well. So what fragrance or mental state do you want to perfume the world with? What do you want to bring to the world? Do you want to bring a sense of love and brightness? Or do you want to bring a sense of grumpiness and contraction, irritability? So in verse 51, the Buddha says, like a beautiful flower, brightly coloured but without scent, even so useless is the well-uttered speech of one who does not act accordingly. So even so useless is the well-uttered speech of one who does not act accordingly. So it's all very well, isn't it, speaking the Dharma or speaking about being good and generous and kind and patient and all those virtuous ethical behaviours, if we don't do it ourselves, yeah? So we need to walk the talk. Yeah, as Buddhists, we need to try and exemplify our ethics in what we do, not just chant them in the shrine room or profess to others that we're Buddhists and therefore we're going to act like that. We actually need to do it, yeah? We need to walk the talk. Because it's useless, the well-uttered speech of one who does not act accordingly. And that can be a tough call at times, can't it? You know, when we do lose it and get irritable at the end of a long day. But we can just use it as a reminder of our ideals and what we're trying to live up to. Okay, we're going to look at one more verse, and that's verse 183, which is from chapter 14, which is chapter of the Enlightened One. And this verse is probably one of the most famous verses from the Dhammapada. And we chanted it yesterday. It's the first verse of the Dhammapala Gatha. So the English is the not doing of anything evil, undertaking to do what is ethically skillful, and complete purification of the mind. This is the ordinance of the Enlightened Ones. Yes, we're learning to chant this in the Dhammapala Gatha, where we're chanting it in the Pali. And I think that's a lovely thing to do, to go back to the Pali. It's another way, it's another step removed, isn't it, to going back to the actual word of the Buddha and how he would have said it. Yes, so the not doing of anything evil, undertaking to do what is ethically skillful, and complete purification of the mind. This is the ordinance of the Enlightened Ones. So, ordinance is a translation of the word sasana. And it's quite an Panti says it's quite an untranslatable word. So sometimes you'll see it translated as the teachings of the Buddhas, but he's using the word ordinance. I just kind of get the sense it's the sphere of, the realm of, the ordinance of, the teachings of, you know, practicing ethics. It is the way of the Buddhas. It's what the Buddhas would have done. So it's going back to that whole sense of acting as if the Buddhas. So the Buddha would have done. So the realm of the Buddha, the ordinance of the Buddha, is the realm of not doing anything evil and doing what is ethically skillful. Yeah, so when we're in that realm of of not doing anything evil and undertaking to do what is skillful. We are in the realm of the Buddhas. We are acting as if the Buddhas would do. And this is another way in thinking about how ethical practice is a way of being with the Buddha. Yeah. So that being the theme of the retreat, in a sense, it's not just seeing ethical practice as a means in itself. So we're not doing ethical practice just because that's what Buddhists do. We're doing ethical practice, or we're trying to practice ethically as another way of being with the Buddha, of acting out his teachings, of acting as if he would have done. Yeah, so we're acting ethically because that is what he taught us to do. That is, we're hearing his teachings and we're being taught by him, and therefore we're being with him. So in the way of reflecting on our ethics together, we can also just cultivate this attitude of feeling taught by the Buddha. Yeah, and also that we are following in his footsteps by acting ethically, and we are trying to act as he would have done. So practicing ethics is another way of us cultivating this sense of just being with the Buddha, of being daughters and disciples of the Buddha ourselves. So yeah, we can just go into our groups this morning and think about how we practice ethics, and how that practice of ethics can be a way to being with the Buddha. We can think about these teachings that the Buddha's given us from the Dhammapada on ethics. Are we quick to do what is morally beautiful? What are we filling our water pots with? What are we perfuming the world with? And just remembering that ethical practice is the ordinance, it is the teachings, it is the way of the enlightened ones, of the Buddha, of what we're aspiring to do. That cultivating ethics, practicing ethics, is acting as the Buddha would have done. And it is our first step on these three great stages, yeah, of ethics to meditation and wisdom. Of getting off the wheel, of seeing things as they really are, of gaining wisdom and awakening. Great, so that's our mission, should we accept it this morning? It's just to really go and get a cup of tea now and go to our, have a little, whatever we need to do, and then we'll meet in the groups at 2:15. And just really dive in looking at these verses and how they relate to our lives. Enjoy. How do I get out?
I'm trapped.
Hello?
Hi, Gavin, that was good.